today's You Made Me Read This is all about non-noir noir.
That's a good way to put it.
And David gave me Spider-Man Noir, written by David Hine, Fabrice Sapolsky.
Mm-hmm.
Art by Carmen Di Giandomenico,
who I believe is Italian, which would explain the name. Possibly Carmine.
Carmine. Well, they do good work.
Yeah.
But you say it is not pulp. Or, excuse me, you say it is not noir, it is pulp.
Yeah. Should I
explain that. Expand on that.
Pretty much, this is probably a super nitpicky, self-indulgent thing. But, you know, kind of like my website. When I think of noir, I think of things like mood and tone.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the way things are shot, like film noir, is, I mean, it's pretty much like the only touchstone for deciding what noir is.
Uh-huh.
And there are a variety of working definitions for it. But the one I keep coming back to is about how noir tends to be about, like, the untrustworthiness,
mm-hmm.
whether of the main character or of the main character's wife, of anyone in the story,
mm-hmm.
authority figures, police especially. And while this has some of that, it has more in common with, like, pulp novels, where there's, like, an awesome mass adventurer, you know, uses twin pistols, and he always beats the bad guys or fights the Nazis or that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it has noir elements, but, like, if I were doing a Spider-Man noir story, I don't think this is how it would have ended up. Like, it's a little too focused on the adventure instead of the, I guess mood would be a good way to put it. Like, the tone is just slightly off.
Well, I would say my definition of noir is that nothing's any use.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you try to be an idealist, no one else will be. And so everything's going to end up miserable. Anyway, forget it, Jake, it's Chinatown.
Yeah.
And I would say this did not act according to that, in that there is a happy-ish ending.
Mm-hmm.
And and it's kind of a cheat in that at the very end, Peter Parker does act according to his best instincts, but someone else takes the villain down.
Hmm.
That he's always, he's just like, no, I will not kill.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Which I think was an interesting way of getting around the heroes don't kill thing.
Yeah.
Keeps coming up. Because I like that in this one, instead of just being like, you know, killing's wrong, here's like his aunt tells him, you know, no good's going to come of this. And that's why he doesn't kill anyone anymore.
But in fact, good does come of them being killed.
Yeah.
So,
like, that sin is on someone else's soul, so it's okay.
Like, noir, some good would come of people not being killed.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the essential evilness of the world, it won't. Also, I think you're right about the pulp thing. I mean, there shouldn't be a crazy spider god.
Yeah,
that gives him powers.
That's the only part that comes off weird. And what's interesting is
there's
also barely touch it.
Various freak show guys.
But
like, Mar tends to just have heavies,
people.
You know?
Yeah. I thought it was clever how they took kind of the concept of the heavy or like the circus strongman and applied it mm-hmm. to this by using the circus geeks and freaks.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it's still, like, they're not just, you know, like, I was caught in a radiation blast and an octopus standing next to me. You know, it's just, you know, he's a gross, flesh-eating vulture guy. Like, he's just nasty. As opposed to being, like, a dude with wings on his back who flies around all the time. Like, I think it did a pretty good job of transplanting most of the Spider-Man stuff into the past. And with the Spider-God being the one part where it's like, huh, well, that was just 3 pages, so, you know, I'll just read the rest of it and be okay with it.
There's some good 1930s atmosphere.
Yeah.
That really worked. The Aunt May being a commie.
Yeah.
J. Jonah Jameson being talking about how Ben Parker was great, but a little red around the gills.
Even the speakeasy, I thought, was like a dead-on... Like, it makes sense that Felicia Hardy, the Black Cat, would own a nightclub in, mm-hmm. you know, the 30s or whatever. And this is just before Nazis were a going concern. So it's like...
In fact, I think the last page mentions them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Hitler's Nazis gain power. And the next story is about Dr. Octopus as a Nazi sympathizer.
Oh, boy.
It was... It's better than it had any right to be.
How can a guy who's part octopus be all about racial purity?
Well, he's not. He's technically... Well, actually, I'd have to blow the end of the story to tell you
all right.
what happens with that.
Well, we can't do that.
But I'll say that does come up, and it is like a major factor in the story.
I would say, for it to be a noir story, mm-hmm. the intro is Ben... Urich. Is he a spider guy?
Telephone. Yeah, he's a...
regular Spider-Man guy.
Yeah, he's kind of... He plays sort of a mentor for Peter Parker.
Mm-hmm.
In that he works at the Daily Bugle, sort of like he does here, and he's like the veteran reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And there was actually a good bit where he just reveals that, like, he knew who Spider-Man was the entire time because he's that good of a reporter. But he didn't want to say anything because, you know...
That would be rude.
Yeah. So he's someone that Peter goes to for advice and things like that.
Okay. Can I... This is many years old, so I'm just going to go ahead and spoil this plot like crazy. He reveals that he was in some ways complicit with the mob. Mm-hmm. Well, he came in as like this hard-bitten, realistic guy who's like, this is just how the life works, but I like you, kid. You're an idealist, you know? Something about your stubborn determination makes me... want to take you under my wing and make you my assistant.
Yeah.
And protect you from the mob. And so he's the real noir hero where he's just like, the world is wrong, but there's this tiny flare in him that really wants the world to be right.
Yeah.
And then he finally is just like, no, I will throw away all of my attachment to the corruption of this world and make this one big stand. And then he gets shot. That was a noir book.
I think
if you just lifted the Peter Parker character out, that would be complete noir.
I think that especially the fact that when he saw... when Ben Urich saw Ben Parker die, I didn't realize they were both Bens until like right now, and I've been reading Spider-Man for 20 years. But
same with me with Martha Wayne and Martha Kent.
Yeah. Like, what is up with that? But, like, witnessing that murder and being a small part of it, however much, you know, he was a part of it, it broke him, and that's where the junkie part came from, I think. And the reason why it's so much worse now. Unless...
I thought the reason he saw it at all was he was a junkie, so he was into the guys. But that, I think, made him want to, like, protect the rest of them.
Yeah. And you can even look at him taking Peter Parker under his wing as, I guess, penance for what he witnessed.
So, but that would be a noir story. If it were a, well, if it were a Frank Miller noir, there would be a whole lot more fist fighting.
Yeah.
And naked hookers. But he would, like, have sent those files he had to, actually, he would have done exactly what he did.
Which is send them to the newspaper.
Well, he sent them to...
Oh, to Peter, yeah.
No, he sent them to Felicia.
Wow, I have not read this in ages.
Or he kept them with Felicia, and then he was going to turn them over.
Yeah.
But...
Well, he told me if anything happened to him, Peter would know what to do with them.
So, yeah. And, so, his death and... But his life's work eventually brought down the guys.
Mm-hmm.
With a little help from Peter Parker and the Spider God.
And bullets.
Worst god ever. Ugh, spiders. anyway, that would have been a noir with the Peter Parker, Peter Parker story on top of it. It's pulp. Too many peas.
That makes sense. I think that that's a really good point. And even kind of like how he's doing good, but it doesn't quite work out for him.
Yeah.
I think that one of my favorite bits,
but like
was,
that last heroic act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to let reality dictate anything.
Except whether I live or die.
Yeah.
Damn.
I like the bit when Vulture attacks Aunt May.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter just thinks about his uncle and kills a vulture. And her response is, just who do you think you are? You shot an unarmed man.
Who is about to kill me yeah. with his gigantic freak teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did not like her in that story.
Really? I think that, like, as the hardline voice, like, one of the very few voices of good and reason, mm-hmm. I thought it worked. That she was, I mean, she says, I don't want to live in a world where people kill one another like animals. And it's
yeah, but
entirely...
at least you're like, thank you for saving me. I mean, seriously, I'm sorry, but this guy was about to eat me alive.
I could see that. Maybe
like,
she's just
yes.
saying thank you.
Awesome. Don't kill next time. She, in this story, she reminds me of the more unpleasant aspects of Dr. Leslie, what's her name?
Tompkins.
Who basically is like, I'll help you, Batman, but I'll make you feel like crap every single second of every single time that I do.
I think that, I guess part of the reason why this worked so well for me is that, like, I know all these characters really well.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they took everything I like and put it into something else that I already like. It's like if Batman joined the Secret Six for you or something like that. But yeah, there was an entire line of noir books, and most of them, they were kind of hit or miss.
Mm-hmm.
There's Wolverine Noir, which was one of the good ones, because it was actually very noir-y, with like the shifting focus and, you know, untrustworthy narrator. And even the point when you find out, like, the big secret, and the big secret isn't that he did something good and it ended up good. The big secret is that he did something terrible and ran away from it.
Isn't that always the big secret?
But you'd think in superhero comics, like, the big secret is, you know, I saved a baby that I wasn't supposed to save and got kicked off the force, you know, or something like that.
So what was the terrible thing?
There was a woman that he loved,
mm-hmm.
and he went to confess his love for her,
mm-hmm.
but he brought his knives along as well. And there was a scuffle and a fight, and one of his friends ended up basically, like, brain damaged out of that. His friend who he was taking care of.
So he went to confess his love, but he brought his knives along?
Yeah.
As a woman... I'm going to have to say, that was a terrible idea. Like, someone just shows up at your place and it's just like, I love you!
Yeah.
Here's my knife!
That sets
the wrong tone.
But it also shows how he's kind of... He's broken in this story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he found, like, the girl he loves and a good friend of his, and they were embracing...
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember if it was more than embracing, I'm just going to roll with that. And he reacted poorly.
Embracing involves a lot of different things, yes.
And he reacted poorly. And then, you know, he fought and, like, I thought you were my friend, blah, blah, blah. And whoops, now my friend can't talk anymore. And he's kind of slow. But it's really about how, like, he's not really a hero. And he needs to do something good mm-hmm. to make up for his sins in the past instead of just running from it. I thought that one was pretty good. The others, I think there was X-Men Noir and a couple others that didn't really make an impression. But, yeah, Spider-Man Noir, I like this one a lot.
Hmm.
And, like, the mystical stuff is just kind of swept under the...
The art is good, good color, good tone. It's more detailed than most Noir is, but
it's
it doesn't
bright.
Take away from the...
from the tone.
The starkness of it.
The part of it is that...
It kind of makes things look dirty instead, in the good way.
Yeah.
The noir way instead of the usual starkness that you see.
I think that it's because Domenico. I can't say his name. Like, I can write it easily, but pronouncing Italian is not my forte. He does boxing comics. That's how he came over to Marvel. He did a boxing comic with...
Did he do that, Ben... Wait... Matt, battling Matt Murdock.
Matt. Or
Daredevil's
Jack
dad.
Murdock, yeah.
Jack Murdock, okay.
Did I make you read that?
You showed me the end, and I liked the end. That was cute. Or not cute, but.
It was
sweet. Oddly sweet.
Bittersweet, I guess is the word. But yeah, he does that, and he's very good at doing both, like, violence that's visceral, but not so visceral that you're like, you know, ah. But, like, the way he renders people and the fashions and stuff, he's really good at doing that. Like, Ben Urich doesn't have, like, the Batman stubble where it's, like, his entire chin is just, you know, hash marks. It's just a few here and there. And it works out. Like, you can see it here. It's, like, the outline of where a mustache would be.
Yeah.
And I think that works. Like, it really... Everyone looks different. Everyone looks believable. Old people look old as opposed to just being shrunken. Yeah, I was pretty impressed. The second one's, it's not as good, but it's really good in certain parts, if that makes sense. But it's still well worth looking up.
All right, so, my non-noir noir.
Yeah, why is this one not noir? Because it's about light?
Light is a good metaphor for most noir. Look at The Third Man. Reaching up towards the grate. I don't know. I mean, it has noir elements, like Poison Ivy is the dame who means well, but she just can't help but be trouble.
She's definitely a textbook femme fatale in this one.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very interesting.
Although in the first part, she seems kind of determined to get better.
Yeah.
She makes it a little... better. I don't know. Noir, this is more like just building codes.
But really exciting portrayals of building codes. But it's Anne Nocenti, who is one of my favorite writers.
If it is noir, though, it would make her the hero, since technically she is battling the evil industrialist.
That would so then what would that make Batman?
That would make Batman. Well, that's why it's not noir, because he's not an evil industrialist. He's like, Bruce Wayne. Is that a problem? Well, let me change that. Damn, I wish you'd just sent me a letter.
Yeah. This one, I like this one.
I liked it too.
John Van Fleet, I like him, but he can be a little bit too heavy on the photo reference. Mm-hmm. Like, there's one panel where it's just like an eyeball and it's colored green. And, like, you didn't draw that. Like, that's a bit much. But overall, like, the mood, this kind of sickly brown that's on every page. I think he colored it all. It's, like, fully painted, too. So he's just credited as artist. But, pretty much there's a giant tower. It's blocking Ivy's light, and she complains about it. And then these guys get infected with some poison. And Batman digs her up and is like, hey, you gotta help me solve this crime. And it turns out, like, oh no, she's the one behind it. Or is she?
She is.
But not on purpose, which I thought was interesting.
The fun thing, though, is that the way to cure it is for Ivy to kiss them.
On the lips.
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, I think Batman goes like, wait, on the lips? Yeah, she goes, where did she kiss you? And then the guy goes, on the lips. And it's like, where else would she kiss him? What, you know, what's your deal?
Forehead kiss that, like,
yeah,
either side that's European.
It takes two, one on each cheek to cure the poison.
We're going continental.
Yeah. I think that what I like is that, like, I think Nocenti does the most interesting... This is going to sound, like, super mannish or whatever, or chauvinist, but, like, women issues in comics.
She does the lady thing as well.
Just about, like... But, like, about
it must
stories
be
about
her
being
special
a woman.
Lady brain.
I think she does have a lady brain. But, you know, like, people do stories about sexism, and, like, the highlight is when the woman kicks the guy in the nuts. But this is, it's more thoughtful. It's, she's really kind of deconstructing the femme fatale over the course of the story. Because, I guess, to bring it all back to noir, the femme fatale is a woman who destroys men because of her beauty. Sometimes it's on purpose, sometimes it's not. This one, it's like 50-50 on purpose and not.
Yeah.
And I thought the stuff about how, like, Ivy says the only men that love her are suicidal or insane. I thought that was really sharp. And kind of, like, most portrayals of Poison Ivy stop at, like, she's the sexy leaf lady.
Mm-hmm.
But to kind of think about what it means if you kiss Ivy on the lips, and then she's the super seductress, you know. And then, of course, on the suicidal or insane page is the introduction of Batman in the story, which I thought was also kind of a funny juxtaposition. But yeah, this just, like, I want to see more portrayals of Ivy like this, where she kind of, she talks about what she is and why she is. Because, like, the seductress part is boring. Like, that's probably the most boring aspect of Ivy, Catwoman, Harley Quinn. It's just creepy and weird.
Well, but, for know. Some things, like, seductress, okay, we were talking about exploitation.
Yeah.
Seductress, making her a seductress so often, like, and with a bad writer, is just men like her, and we're gonna make, in comics it's a visual medium, so we're gonna draw her really sexy.
Yeah.
And that's it. She's sexy, guys like sexy, and that makes her irresistible.
Yeah.
And if they actually focused on some of the more mental stuff, aspects of seduction, or how the personality syncs up between them, that makes for an interesting seductress story.
I think, like, the...
Like, there's no woman so sexy that every single guy will fall for her.
Especially if she's made out of poison.
Yeah. There are just, you know, different types of people in the world. She could, like, get herself into the world where most of the guys are the type of guy who will, you know, in the criminal world where most of the guys are the type of guy who will fall for her.
Yeah.
But just saying, oh, she's sexy, so every single guy will like her, is not interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Being like, why she's sexy, why this guy likes her, that's interesting.
So pretty much taking it from, like, a macro level to where she is this, to the micro level where it's like, this happened because.
Yeah.
I think that...
Now, see, what gets me... It feels like much of the story is this is set up for this page.
The punch
where
or the fall?
Well, there isn't a punch, and that's why there's a fall. But... So, there's this poison. It's only cured if Poison Ivy kisses you on the lips. But when she kisses you on the lips, for a split second, you go unconscious, but when you wake up, you're cured. And then Batman and Poison Ivy meet up at the top of this really, really tall tower. And Batman's like, I have to kiss you on the lips to cure myself. But if I kiss you on the lips, I will fall unconscious and you will either stab me or just let me fall off the roof. And she's like, no, I won't. Trust me. And he's like, yes, you will. So I'm going to have to. And he's actually, like, brandishing his fist at this point. I'll have to knock you unconscious, then kiss you so that... And, like, that's basically the scene of the story. Like,
it's
the big symbolic...
Trust. Yeah.
Long fall, seductress, honorable man.
And in the end...
Poison.
And in the end, he doesn't punch her, he does kiss her, and then she kicks him off the building.
No, she just lets him fall.
No, she's totally kicking him. Look at her foot. Like, she just nudges him off.
You're right! I messed up because it shows him falling sideways here, but yep.
I feel like he fell onto, like, their platform they were kissing on, and then she was like, well, might as well.
And then the next thing, she's like, why did I do that?
Yeah.
Damn, that was kind of bad.
And I think that's also the fact that she does that and she doesn't know why is another point of the book, is that like the book, it's called Cast Shadows because certain things cast shadows you can't escape from. Like, it's a running metaphor. And, you know, there's a building that casts shadows, Batman casts a shadow, and within that shadow lives the villains, and then within the villain's shadow lives Batman. It's very circular.
Or like Russian nesting dolls.
Yeah, that are somehow inside of each other. But it's about...
Or like that Box episode of Futurama, where one universe contains the other universe, and the other universe contains that universe, and they switch, so it's a box in our universe which contains our universe.
Jeez, that was a good episode. I can't find the bit now, but she just asks him, she's like, you know, each heroic act spawns, like, a greater act of villainy, and the greater act of villainy causes a greater act of heroism, so we're all kind of caught in the same, I don't know, whirlpool? Is that the fair word for it? And so that when she just kicks him off, it's unconscious because, you know, like, that's what you do when you have Batman at your mercy. You know, they've been doing this forever, so...
It's either kick him or kick yourself.
And in the end, Poison Ivy wins, which I thought was kind of cool.
Well, like, she wins in that she knocks down a building, but...
Yeah, she gets her light back.
Yeah.
I mean, and
she... But also she wins because it was a Wayne property, wasn't it?
No, it was Wayne invested in it.
Ah. But I think he made, like, some decision, we're not going to invest in the next... No, he bought her a greenhouse, didn't he?
Yeah, at the very end, he buys her a new prison cell, which is, I guess... touching.
Yes.
But it's one where there's tons of light.
And a whole bunch of people are like, you know, I like light.
Yeah.
I like flowers. I don't kill people.
Yeah.
They'll help.
But she straight up destroys the doctor. That's where the Femme Fatale comes in, is that the originator of the plot was actually a doctor who she'd spilled secrets to while she was drugged, and he was in love with her, so to gain her favor, he did a terrible thing. Which is actually straight out of noir. Like, that's very much like how the Femme Fatale works. But yeah, I liked it. Like, there's a whole lot to like about this.
Yeah.
Even in the way, like, Batman's relationship to his villains and how sometimes it goes beyond punching. Like, I keep thinking back to the, was it Justice League where the Flash and Batman were hanging out and they go to Keystone City? And Flash is very, like, friendly with his villains. Like, he finds a trickster in the bar. And he's like, are you off your meds again? You know, they're just, like, hanging out and talking. And Batman... Was Batman even in that episode?
Yes. They're building a Flash museum. And manipulates Batman into...
Yeah.
Attending. Him and Orion.
Yeah.
And Orion's like, I don't understand what you see in him. And Batman gives him that Batman contempt. And it's like, no, you don't.
But I thought that, like, part of the reason why I liked, like, the Jeff Johns, Scott Collins Flash run, is that it was about Wally's relationship to his villains, to where it's not just, you know, I hate the Flash, I'm going to kill the Flash. Like, they talk, and some have reformed, some have de-reformed.
Reverted?
Yes. And this kind of gets at a little bit of that, is that Batman sees Ivy's point by the end of the book. It's not just, you know, I'm going to turn all the fish into laughing fish, and that's going to be the end of my plot, because that's all I got, you know.
I like the laughing fish.
Oh, yeah, it's great, but it doesn't make any sense. Like, it's a Joker for the sake of... It's Joker being the Joker for the sake of being the Joker. You can say that three times fast.
I can't.
Because... Actually, yeah, you know what? I would say that Poison Ivy is the hero of the story. Because she wasn't trying to do evil.
Right up until she tries to...
Yeah, until she kicks him off the roof.
Yeah.
But she's inventing plants that... You know, there's the whole page of crazy inventions that she's come up with. Like, vines that can replace steel. A new kind of aloe that treats burns. She solves the problem of the... I guess the toxin. And then, I mean, and then she breaks out of the hospital. But in her defense, like, it really looked like she was guilty. Yeah, this is good. And it's part of the reason why I wish Anne Ocenti were still writing more comics. Because she does, like, the cerebral, like, thinking man superhero very well. Without coming coming off like, you know, I read a book on philosophy and psychology once. Let me throw some words at you and see if they make sense. Yeah, and even up till the end, Batman doesn't really believe her. Until she kicks him off the building. And then he badgers her into curing the one guy who she hated the most.
Kick me off the building. Come on. Pucker up.
Yeah. quid pro quo. Come on. But it's when it puts, like, Ivy, the, I guess, sexual nature of Ivy, like, front and center, and not, like, the TNA nature.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, the kiss being the cure, like, it's fairy tale, but also, like, it's pretty intimate. And she kisses a whole lot of people in that book. All for the sake of good. It's like a county fair. But yeah, so...
Do they still have that at county fairs?
That's a really good question.
Because that's creepy.
I haven't been to a county fair in forever. But I was watching... I've been watching Reno 911 on Netflix. And there is a fair that this guy set up a kissing booth in. And it was Ku Klux Kisses. Oh. And he was in, like, full hood and, you know, a robe. And the cops just walk up and they're like, nah, you're going with us.
Oh, let's see. I think it was in, like, a Revenge of the Nerds movie.
Yeah.
Oh, and then in Some Like It Hot, Marilyn Monroe talks about how she used to sell kisses for the milk fund.
I feel like a kissing booth at a county fair is so unhygienic that, like, any allure of the kiss is just completely dissolved. Because, like, say you're in line, there's, like, 8 people in line, and there's, like, the big gross Cheetos guy, you know? And, like, congrats, you're right behind him.
You just offer them a toothbrush.
Yeah. Whoever's giving out the kisses is like, ugh, bring the Listerine. And that's how you overthink county fairs. But yeah, so non-noir. That's all I got. Which is
hope you enjoyed
from neo-noir.
It.
Yeah. We'll have to do a neo-noir podcast at some point. That could be fun.